You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet.
And
story is everything.
We're your hosts. I'm Bobby Jean.
And Jim Bell.
And that was our opening music given to us, the rights to listen to it by Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. And the music is Hot Texas. We love that music.
Yeah, we do.
And we're so delighted that you're with us again this week. Jim, who is our guest?
Our guest tonight is Johnny Bernhard.
And here she is.
There she is.
Welcome, Johnny. She's a journalist, editor, writer, novelist, and she's joining us from her home, I'm guessing, in Mississippi.
Yeah, I'm currently in Mississippi now, and we're fortunate enough to have a place between Central and West Texas.
Wonderful.
Best Jim, of both worlds.
Jim, tell us a little bit about Johnny.
Well, let's see. Her works have appeared in a wide variety of publications, including Houston Style Magazine and Word Among Us. Her novels, A Good Girl, How We Came to Be, and Sisters of the Undertow have all been critically acclaimed and award winners. Tonight, we'll be chatting with her about her recent title, Hannah and Ariella, named a summer read by D South Magazine and publishes weekly selection for books to read. Okay, Johnny.
Thank you, Jim.
So, Johnny, tell us, our listeners, a little bit about your background and your writing background.
I'd be happy to, and it's wonderful to be with both of y'all tonight. Bobby Jean, we go back a few years, so
we do.
It's wonderful to be a part of this new format. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I've always loved reading and writing professionally. I went on to get a bachelor's in journalism and worked in Houston for daily newspapers, freelance work for magazines. Loved hearing stories from people. You know, of course, at the time when I was doing that, I was very young. In my early 20s, fresh out of college, I didn't know why I loved it. I just knew I loved it. And I realize now I love story. I love people telling their story. My husband and I started a family as a journalist. I was working a lot of nights. And so I went back to school and took classes on a master's level and got a degree in English again. I love stories, so it was a great way to combine writing, reading, and working with young people, which is, if you teach and you're working with young people, for me, it was the fountain of youth. Mm-hmm. And I still do some teaching, guest teaching at local high schools and virtual teachings for national writing centers. And was out in the workforce for many, many years in different positions. And I hit the magic age of 50. Actually, both of my children were leaving graduate school at the same time. So wasn't so much a financial need. And with the blessing of my family, which was very important to me, I was able to get out of the workforce and begin writing full time. It's really funny now when I look back on it. I was able to write a column here in Ocean Springs, a local newspaper called On the Front Porch. And they were just little character sketches of life in a small town in the South. And they became popular to the point where I'd go to the grocery store and someone would say, Johnny, I read that column, The Black Sheep. Who's the black sheep in Austin Springs? And I'd have fun with it, saying, well, there's a little black sheep in all of us, right? I had a lot of fun with that, and I didn't realize it at the time. I was creating these characters that I later used in the novels. So I've worked really hard. I'm 60 now and grateful to have been able to be traditionally published and put out four novels in that time. And kudos to all those writers out there that are working full-time jobs and also writing novels. I support them. I'm in awe, but that's a little bit of my professional background.
Well, that's always so interesting, I think, where people get the creative spark and what they do with it, and if they have to delay it or they act on it right away. I know Jim Christina used to always sort of say, keep the day job as long as, you know, you can. But I think that certainly finding the time is a challenge when you're...
The time, yes, Bobby, Jean, but I think also for me, I can't speak for other writers. It's the maturity and the things I've learned and heard along the way. Would I be able to write Hannah and Ariella when I was 25? No. I'm not the woman I am today that I was at 25. And I have a deeper understanding of the human condition and empathy and points of view than I did at 25. And that's just a maturing process.
Well, since you're bringing up Hannah and Ariella, and one more time, I'm going to hold up the cover of the book. And I would agree with you, as a reader, that had this book come my way in my 20s, it wouldn't have nearly the impact that it has on me at an age a little older than you, Johnny. we are both a lot like Hannah and August. So I could relate with this book almost from, you know, from page one. So why don't you tell us a little bit about Hannah and Ariella, maybe where the story comes from, and some of the important issues that you wanted to be sure that this book addressed.
Thank you. Well, this small place that my husband and I have out is 70 acres. We call it in the middle of nowhere, Texas, and we love that. It's quiet. We really enjoy nature, and it's a great place to write. And I had to learn the land because I had grown up in South Texas around the Houston area, and we've always lived in the South with lots of grass and things are blooming. But when you move to a very arid area and the sky is so large, and I think that's why all those great singer-songwriters are coming out of West Texas. It does something for you, yes, within your soul, creatively, and to be away from the noise of everyday life. We live near the nearest town is a small town, Junction, Texas. And we began getting the weekly paper shipped to our home in Mississippi. And my husband and I had a ball reading the crime report prior to 2019. And it was always dog barking, woke up neighbor, snake in the garage, cow got out of the pen. We just loved it. And then I began seeing a shift. In 2019, human trafficking, because Junction is on the I-10 corridor, and it's probably 90 miles from the border with Mexico. And it really perked my interest. And then I saw by 2020 that gradual shift to that very dark crime increased in this little town. And I thought, what is going on? Now, that's my perspective. Mm-hmm. And the more I researched it, the more I wanted to know. It was a hole that if I spent my lifetime, I could not get to the bottom of that hole. Mm-hmm. And I realized human trafficking is huge. It's always been there. It's increased since 2019, particularly along that border. But the human trafficking corridor I found in my research is from San Diego, I-10 corridor, to Jacksonville, Florida. Mm-hmm. Lots of international airports, lots of small towns to hide, lots of safe houses. So I read books. I did a lot of research online, particularly through the Mississippi Department of Justice and exchanging emails once I got a contact, reading stuff within the Texas Department of Justice, what was going on. And like I said, I could, if I spent the rest of my life continuing to dig, I'd never reach the bottom. The Louisiana Highway Patrol, which sometimes handles these human trafficking events, they put out the statistic every 30 seconds in this country, the United States, someone is made a victim of human trafficking. Mm. It is the fastest growing crime in the world. Astounding. And let's never forget that when people are vulnerable, either because of war, famine, lack of money to feed their children, there's movement of people, and that makes it easier for the predators. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I say that it's the fastest growing crime in the world, I'm talking about Ukraine, Afghanistan, where there is huge unrest and people are in dire straits. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. I watched some documentary. If your listeners are interested, PBS Nightline has a couple of recorded documentaries on human trafficking and that movement of people illegally across borders and who is ultimately receiving mm-hmm. these human beings mm-hmm. for their need. I try to make it I've been so fortunate, Bobby Jean, in being able to speak in many different states about this. And people always ask, well, what is the head of the snake? How do we stop this? Mm-hmm. The head of the snake in human trafficking is greed.
It's greed.
So human beings and the selling of human beings, either for labor, for sex, you name it, is more profitable to criminals than moving drugs, and it's easier than moving drugs. Mm. So,
you would think, though, I mean, there is not exactly a secret out there, but we kind of don't get too involved in it, as it appears to me, as a country or as a populace. And you would think we'd really be concerned about this, you know. Having somebody being carted off, is that not something that mm-hmm. would really bother us? Mm-hmm. Particularly if it's somebody you knew? Mm-hmm. Or
Jim, I agree with you. And that was my first thought. But I had to remember I was this one discovering that this was happening. There are many heroic, amazing human beings that know about this, that are working. The Mississippi Secretary of State, Michael Watson, in the last month, so people are talking, right, where I live, has declared Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And he set up meetings to meet with businesses to make them alert to maybe labor that may be coming on board mm-hmm. that was found through human trafficking. I'm doing an event, a charity event, this Saturday in Biloxi for a nonprofit, a Jubilee Haven. You can find them online. They've got a Facebook page. Jim and Bobby Jean, this nonprofit was founded by a woman. She's a mother and a grandmother now and a working professional that was trafficked when she just graduated from high school in Biloxi many, many years ago.
Wow.
So there are many people that know what this are working hard to do something about it. I think it's new for us as lay people. Because we're just now seeing the horrific newscast, and we can all reflect on the time this past summer when we saw the trailer full of victims of human trafficking that were left to die in that trailer in the heat of a Texas summer. That had national exposure. So we're becoming more aware, and that's good. And I think, as a mother and as a grandmother, what is the most that I could do? And I ask people that I speak with in book clubs and other people that are interested and they read the story, said, have the conversation with your children and your grandchildren. Tell them about social media. So there is a lot of things going on behind the scenes in social media where traffickers might be figuring out where a child attends school. Because people will tell you what they're having for breakfast on social media.
Oh, yes.
And if you're a predator,
information.
Yes. There's a scripture right at the beginning of the book from Deuteronomy. And I can read it, or you can read it, or Jim can read it.
I'm happy to read it to all audience, and thank you for remembering that. So when I was writing this, I had been in a class where I came across this scripture. It wasn't an afterthought to put it the opening of the book. And let me read it, it'll make more sense to our audience. Cursed be anyone who perverts the justice due to the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. And I, at that time, several years ago, I was researching human trafficking. And I came across that for something very different I was doing. And I said, that's the plot. Those are my three characters.
So who are those three characters?
So the sojourner is Ariella, because she's trafficked from Zaragoza, Mexico, into Rock Springs, Texas, which is very near Junction. And the fatherless is her friend, Katia, also from Zaragoza. So for a writer, and I can't speak for other writers, pardon me, when you come across something like this and you're researching a book, divine intervention, oh my gosh. I knew how to write the book. You could have all the research in the world, but I'm writing fiction, not nonfiction.
Right.
So I have to find that perfect lead for characters and that plot to create a story. So I'm very grateful for that.
You want to ask her about multiple points of view?
Well, we can. That's going to come up. You know, it's a story, but it's very real.
And it feels so real.
It's like these characters. I mean, this can happen and does happen. And it's kind of like you think, no, it's not going to happen. It doesn't happen to anybody I know. Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. And I know that in my previous business experiences years ago, that kidnappings were a big thing across the border. and
hope for business too.
The people I've known have been kidnapped and held mm-hmm. for ransom by these mm-hmm. gangs. Right. It's not nobody wants to talk about this right. kind of thing, but it's for real. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We had a question. We had a question about.
We have lots of questions.
You know, the story is told through the eyes of the characters, and I think we call that multiple points of mm-hmm. view. Mm-hmm. Would you like to care to say a couple of thoughts about that?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Jim. I'm yeah. certainly not the first writer to use multiple right. point of view, but I will tell you, as a writer, it was tough. It was really, really tough to write multiple mm. point of view. But I didn't know any other way to tell this story of the principal characters, because I wanted them, each of those characters, to give their mm. backstory and mm-hmm. their unique point of view, because I felt Ariella's point of view, Hannah's point of view, Ricky the trafficker, mm-hmm. yeah. his point of view, his backstory in his words was just as important as the women that the book is named for. Mm-hmm. Because without that, Ricky's just a bad guy.
True.
Ricky's more mm-hmm. than just a bad guy. Mm-hmm. It's not that I'm asking the reader to excuse the fact that Ricky chose to be a trafficker and a member of a gang.
Right.
Yeah, particularly when he starts as a nice guy.
Well, I think the multiple
growing up,
and I think the multiple points of view from a reader, since you all know we're not writers, we're readers. So mm-hmm. as a reader, it engages us immediately. And I certainly felt an alliance with Hannah and Hannah's story, because I'm kind of in that part of life that Hannah's in. And so somebody else might say, well, I'm of the age of Ariella, and she really, you know, or I have a friend like Katia, and boy, I can really relate. So I think having also the different characters, and even though August, we don't get a first person, but we get a lot about August through Hannah. And I would think that you must have felt some kind of an affinity to Hannah's husband, to August.
I didn't think he was that old, you know.
Good for you, Jim. Well, you know, that leads us to one of the themes, the bigger picture in this story, is I make a lot of comments about ageism.
That's true.
And I purposely created Hannah in a way, as the heroine she is, that she's 73 years old and a widow. And by doing that, I'm making a statement about ageism, mm-hmm. that I think women become wiser, stronger, and sexier as they become older. I think we become who we are meant to be because we got it.
Good.
We're comfortable in our skin, mm-hmm. and that's Anna.
Mm-hmm. We've important. Lived through it.
That's important.
We've lived life. We know what it is. And we understand people far better than we did. And what's interesting about Ariella is that I'm getting younger readers now mm-hmm. because of this 14-year-old character and the 14-year-old character of her best friend, Katia. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I have a couple of high school English classes reading this book now that I'll visit with in February that I can't wait to hear what they have to say.
And of course,
Ricky is an older teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's true.
We're talking about the book Hannah and Ariella, and it is available through a lot of different wonderful ways for you to get this book. One way is through bookshop.org and our affiliate page. So we're going to take a very brief moment to let you know that here is a way you can get this book, bookshop.org, from Out West Shop. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shops Bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writers. We're talking to Johnny Bernard. You know, we're talking about characters in the book, Hannah and Ariella. And we have a character with no name. But this character is extremely pivotal to the story. Tell us about the ghost doll.
Oh, well, I'm happy to share that story with you. It's a lot like that scripture when I had read that about the ghost dogs of Texas, and it's from Texas mythology or folk history, folklore. And I read it several years ago in a magazine, and I just slipped that into my desk knowing such a great story. Someday I'm going to use that. So the ghost dog from Texas folklore was a man from the 19th century, and he was very, very close to his dog. Man's best friend, correct?
Right.
And the man passed away. He lived out on the land, lived an interesting life, served in several wars. And when the man died, the dog never left the grave site. And eventually the dog dies, and he becomes a ghost dog, still protecting the grave of his master. So I just thought that's an incredible story about the bonding between human and animal. And if you're lucky enough to experience that in your life, you know what I'm talking about. It's a sacred thing. Mm-hmm. And it also is a touch on the supernatural, or things beyond our reality that we know in our hearts there's something out there like that, because the love and that bond goes far beyond death, correct? So I love that. There's a bit of West Texas folklore and South Mexico for folklore, and that appears later in the book when there's quite a tense moment between a border patrol agent, a small town sheriff, and a man representing the law in Zaragoza, Mexico, who's not exactly straight.
No.
And they're going out on a dangerous mission where they all could be killed, and tension is high. And the DEA agent, or the border agent, knows what this man has done. This man supposedly representing justice and the law in Mexico. And so does the sheriff. And they begin chiding him, working on him. And suddenly, when they're on this dirt road headed toward a place where some people are being hidden, victims of human trafficking and who could be killed, appearing from the sky, the weather begins to change, a horrible thunderstorm, lightning storm, and also appearing from the sky and comes up close to the windshield of a truck is a huge bird with wings expanded to cover the windshield. And when that bird comes that close, it has the face of a woman. And that's from Mexican folklore, that anyone that has injured a woman, this creature appears, and her magic power is electricity. And there's been stories told in West Texas and along the border of how this being appears and shorts out batteries to car and leaves people abandoned in the middle of nowhere in West Texas. And when I read about that in another magazine several years ago, I thought, oh, this is too good. I got to keep that. And I'll eventually work it into a story. So I love mixing those different elements, just like in everything I've written. I also blend in a little history, Texas history, or it could be history from Mississippi. At one time, particularly hurricanes, and that was Sisters of the Undertow, my third book. So I do a little bit of that in Hannah and Ariella as well.
Well, it makes it feel very grounded. There's a point Hannah is driving and she passes an area, a spot where there had been a very significant action in 1910. And she says a little prayer, and she does that every time she drives back that by that particular spot. And again, as a reader, I know I'm reading fiction. I get that. But all of these kinds of things that you weave in as our author, who we're following you, we're trusting you, and you provide these pieces which just make it feel all the more real, I guess I would say. You felt that too, didn't you?
We do that as humans. We could be driving and see a little star marker.
Yes.
And maybe say a quick prayer, thinking of that person that is being remembered. That particular story from 1910, and that's the journalist in me, that was Antonio Rodriguez. It was common at that time, as has been common through the centuries, in that area of Texas and Mexico, that you would have Mexicans come across the border and maybe work at ranches for a season. That still happens today. And Mr. Rodriguez was working at a ranch. And in that time in West Texas, near Rock Springs, and at that time, true story, there was an Anglo ranch woman that was murdered on her ranch. And Mr. Rodriguez was not given a trial. He was put in a jail, and a group of citizens broke him out of that jail and burned him alive at a stake. It caused an international political situation. People were protesting in Mexico City. Dignitaries from Mexico met with people in Washington, D.C. It was quite the political, racial discussion in 1910.
Yeah. It feels so contemporary still.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised when I read that part. You know, I was thinking, boy, that made a big, it was a big issue then. And I thought, perhaps, you know, these things are big issues today, but we kind of cover those things up in days going by. So I was surprised that it really made the mark that it made.
Well, and it impacted Hannah. And I think, again, Hannah is such an interesting character. She's been a woman of strong determination, quietly determination throughout her whole lifetime. But she comes to a point and she has to, you know, draw that line in the sand. She has to make a decision, and she does. And we don't want to do spoil. We don't want to. We want you to read the book, everybody. So we don't want to tell you more.
But you don't want to fool with her.
But you kind of just go like, "Yeah, Hannah."
Well, we don't know what I also want to entice the reader. We have an unusual love triangle in this book.
Yes.
Unusual.
Yes, we do.
We have a spicy little chapter of a beautiful honeymoon in Paris.
Yep. Yes, you've given us, there's just all types of, there's layers to this. There's all kinds of themes, and the way that you stitch it all together, I think, again, as a reader, it just makes it so engaging. And thought-provoking. I think any book that stays with us. We've been talking about, we've finished reading the book a few days ago, but still preparing for tonight. But we found ourselves just continuing to talk. What was that? What page was that on? And, you know, what did he say? What did she say?
Have you been to Paris?
Yes, I have.
I thought maybe you had been.
I didn't have a honeymoon there, but I did go with the love of my life there, my husband.
It's been on our, it's certainly been on Jim's bucket list for a long time. And if we don't, we need to go before we can't. So I think this inspired us, Johnny, this inspired us to get that off the bucket list up here and get it into a plan. How do we do that?
Well, I hope both of you get to go. Such an interesting city. And not only that, you know, when I wove into that particular segment of the book is a little bit of my love as a former English teacher. I had to talk about the lost generation of American writers in Paris before World War II and after the First War, and the richness of the literary society there. Ezra Pound, Fitzgerald, of course, Hemingway, and of course, Hemingway's poor first wife. And, you know, Hannah has to, it's always, Hannah's a second wife, so she always has that in the back of her mind. It's interesting.
We're going to take another very short break. And Johnny, when we come back, I can't believe how fast the time is going. We're going to talk a little bit about your writing process and such. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this word from Out West Shop.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest tonight, Johnny Bernhard.
And by the way, when you shop at outwestshop.com, use coupon code RADIO, RADIO, and save $10 off a purchase of $75 or more.
That's a good deal.
Yeah. So now, Johnny, we're going to switch gears a little bit. Let's chat a little bit about your writing process, however you would like to start to share that.
Well, my unique process, and every writer is going to have a different one, is I have to be inspired by something I read. I have to see or hear something that is so thought-provoking, I cannot let go of that image or what I heard. And it eats away at me. And then I have to think, because my books tend to be character driven. Hannah and Ariella borders on that, because it's got a couple of genres. It's more fast paced. It's a very tight narrative. Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of my journalism coming along. Mm-hmm. And that's because there's a bit of a thriller in it.
There is.
It has to be quicker paced. And I had to rely on my journalism training for quite a bit for that quick pace, that narrative pace. And that would be every single word in that sentence was studied and thought of what would be most effective to move the story. Because in journalism, you may have a giant story that's placed in your lap. And your editor is going to say, I'm going to give you 1,000 words. And back in the old days, it's going to be in inches. So you're thinking, I have a tremendous amount of information that I've got to fit in 3 or 4 paragraphs, or inches, or word count. As writers, fiction writers, we work in word count. As journalists, it would be inches, or they might do a word count now. So I had to really work on that for that pace. So I've got character-driven story, and those characters are very important to me because I want you, the reader, to either love or loathe this character. If you don't feel anything about the character, you will not turn the page. So it's very important to flesh that character out. And so for Hannah, I had to give her a birthday. So the year she was born, when she went to college, what was the political scene in this country? Where did she go to college and what was that city like? Was it a very liberal school like the University of Texas? Or was it conservative like Texas Tech or TCU? All those political ramifications, because whether or not we want to admit it, they affect who we are as human beings. If you were 7 years old in the Great Depression, that stays with you. If you grew up in Paris during the German invasion, stays with you. So the same for all these characters. And so what kind of clothes do they like to wear? How do they wear their hair? Especially for women, because female readers are going to get that. Okay, so Hannah, she's naturally beautiful. She only wears mascara and a little lip gloss. And she has long hair that she puts in a braid, a single braid that touches her back. But her mother had beautiful long hair and was a little freer with it. All those little details. You know, what August looked like when Hannah first met him, an older man. She's a girl in her 20s. He's in his late 30s. She immediately fell in love with him and said the first day, he had gray hair, but I loved it.
I'm with her.
all the way to Ricky, who was the trafficker. Where was Ricky born? Ricky was born in a whorehouse in Acuna, Mexico. That's the first sentence where we're introduced to Ricky. And so we know as readers, this young man has a story. What makes a trafficker is what I'm thinking as a writer. So character development, how they dress, how they sound, what they read, what they eat. I'm trying to create a person that you, the reader, will feel some emotion for.
Do you have a question, Jim? I got to keep that eye on. I can't believe the clock is running down.
Do you multiple writing projects at the same time? Maybe you're working on a novel. Maybe you're working on some sort of publication, maybe. Or just one thing at a time?
When I'm writing the story, that's it.
And it's
an amazing process, Jim, and I'm very grateful for it. Some people say it's like the runner's high. You're just on a completely different plane, and thank God I have a loving and a patient husband. Now at this point, I'm doing a lot of reading and I'm researching different things. I might begin writing a novel, fleshing out some characters, and then I realize this isn't going to work. I have three little books like that that I just put aside and say, it's not taking off to put me in that conscious state to stay with it for 70,000 words, 80,000 words.
So is there something you're working on now we might see in the near future, or is that
just researching.
Okay.
And reading some authors that are thriller writers or just great American authors, like the Pulitzer Prize winner, Larry McMurtry. I read him. I think he's amazing. I began reading his stuff in the 80s, mm-hmm. read everything he wrote, and then sometimes reread. What right. a great writer.
Right.
And McCarthy, Cormac McCarthy, yeah. and his stories mm-hmm. along the border and the plains, mm-hmm. and just amazing writers. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very humbled to be reading and studying their craft. And then, you know, I'm doing some yeah. research on topics that are nonfiction that would be part of a storyline. And I'm enjoying it. I love it.
That's great. Where can listeners, Johnny, find you, follow you, and so forth?
Oh, please visit my website, johnnybernhardtauthor.com. Find me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. On my website, if you're part of the book club, I have a page on my website, Develop with Readers Questions.
Yes, you have some. Yes.
There's also a mechanism where you can email me if you want to talk about the book. I love that. In fact, before we came on the air tonight, I did a book signing in Mobile in early January. Mm-hmm. And there was also a local author there, and he's a retired police officer. And we exchanged mm-hmm. books, and he sent me an email before I came on air about reading Hannah and Ariella, and I was a little worried because I have a Justice Department represented in this book, and it was a nice exchange with
him.
Well, we really thank you for being with us tonight. If you're listening to this as an audio, Johnny spells her name Johnnie. So you want to be sure when you're searching for her that you get the first name spelled correctly. And we stay with us, Johnny, but we want to thank you so much for being with us tonight. We want to, of course, thank all of our listeners mm-hmm. who maybe are listening live or watching live tonight, or perhaps you find this through a podcast link and you're listening down the road. We mm-hmm. want to thank you for giving us your time and your attention. Let's see. Thanks, Sam Hassan and LA Talk Radio.
And Alex. Alex Dormont.
And Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band.
What's coming next?
Yes, next week we're going to be joined by Mark C. Jackson, and we're going to be discussing Blue Rivers of Heaven. He's also a singer, songwriter, and musician. And we'll probably talk a little bit about music with Mark as well. And do you have a quote for us?
Yes, we got one. This is from the French philosopher and writer Albert Camus. In the depth of winter, I finally learned that within me there lay an invincible summer.
Oh, we thank you so much for being with us tonight. And on behalf of myself and Jim.
Is that my name?
Till we meet again next week. Remember,
it's always a great day
out west. Thanks, Johnny.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone. All the best.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.